In the gray stillness high up the mountainside, JT Priest and his men stop their horses on the icy trail.
What's that sound?
It's the damn service engine. They never come up the mountain in this kind of weather.
Think maybe it's the law.
The law, Stanton? To hell with the law. Whoever it is, they've come at the right time. I'm sick of this cold. What about you boys?
The men all nodded, looking miserable.
It's still a good hour or more down the mountain. There's a stretch up ahead where we can take it. Let's get up there and get ready.
At the top of a steep turn in the trail, 100 feet above the rails, Priest slid his horse to a halt and swung down from his saddle. He took the field lens from his saddlebags, pulled it open, squatted down, and steadied his elbow against a rock, then scanned down the mountainside through an encroaching drift of fog. He spotted the engine laboring upward, pulling the small passenger car behind it. But before lowering the lens from his eye, he swept it farther down the mountain and caught sight of the two deputies moving through a stretch of cedar on horseback.
Oh, hell.
What is it, boss?
Nothing. Go send the idiot up here with me. The rest of you drop back down the trail. Get down as close to the tracks as you can. Don't let that engine come to a complete stop, or it'll take all day to get it going again up this grade. Just slow it down. Get in there and take over the engine.
Then what?
And the idiot and I will get on as you come by here. Hurry up, Stanton. Get the men in position.
Stanton reined his horse around sideways to the gathered men.
All right, boys. We're going to take a train ride. Bert, you get over there with Priest. The rest of yous, follow me!
Hold it, Stanton. Why's Priest and my boy staying up here? Why aren't they riding down with us?
Because if we can't slow the train down enough to get on, they will. Now, does that suit you, Luther? Let's go!
Stanton swung his horse away, the men falling in behind him. Luther Eisen lagged back for a second, staring after his son, Bert.
I don't like one damn thing about this.
Winding down a narrow elk path to the rails, Denver Stanton held his horse to one side, letting the other men pass.
All of you get down along that turn and spread out. Now, as soon as the train comes into sight, go to work on it. Grab on and hold on as soon as it slows. The first man who gets to the engine, make that engineer slow down some. But don't let him stop.
What about you, Stanton?
What about me, Luther, damn it? Do I look like I want you holding my hand on this? Slow the damn train and get on it! Don't backtalk me!
Luther Eisen gave Stanton a harsh, lingering gaze. He turned to the Bays brothers.
Come on, you two. Stick with me.
Merle Jones stood beside his iron seat in the engine room, the fireman busy throwing in another shovel full of coal as the engine puffed upward around the turn. When Jones first spotted the two horsemen on the tracks 100 yards ahead, his first instincts were to reach out a hand to the throttle and shut it down.
What the?
But he caught himself just as the fireman looked out the windshield with him.
Hang on, Vance. These boys ain't making a social call.
Uh-oh! I best pour the coal to her!
Do it then, dammit!
Jones opened the throttle the rest of the way, the train already giving the steep grade everything its boiler had.
Steam's the only thing that'll get us through. They ain't blocked the tracks. They must want the engine.
Riding behind the Bays brothers and Luther Eisen, Earl Mellon saw the three of them stop in the middle of the tracks.
What the hell are you doing?
Tom Bays Jr. raised the pistol and pointed at the engine.
Those stupid bastards!
Carl White gigged his horse out of the cover of rock and stopped it beside Mellon.
The train might have slowed if they'd acted like they had some sense. Where's Stanton?
He's back there! He should have stayed with Luther and these boys! They don't know what the hell they're doing!
The train seemed to speed up, boring toward them. Mellon and White saw Luther and the Bays brothers jerk their horses out of the middle of the tracks.
What do we do now?
From out of the rocks came Gant, spurring his horse up beside Carl White.
grab something as he comes by and hang on!
Mellon heeled his horse off to one side, not even drawing his pistol. Back in the small car, C.B. Harrington stiffened at the sound.
Come on, Ryder, something's wrong.
Harrington bolted from his seat, Steelhead right behind him, LeMaster and Louisville Ike trailing. Moving through the cold air from the car to the engine, Harrington caught a glimpse of one of the horsemen.
They're shooting at us!
Radnor rubbed his coat sleeve on the soot-coated glass and looked out in time to see Carl White and Gant drift past, their pistols leveling toward him.
Hell, that's Carl. I know him.
Well, then do something. Let him know it's you.
What are you doing up here?
Beside Jones, the fireman shoveled fast. Two scoops, three, four. Then slammed the iron boiler door shut, threw down his shovel, and snatched up the rifle from its place in the corner.
They're after the engine!
Hell, I know it! Get back there and keep them off us, you damn fools!
Well, come on, you heard him! Let's show these ruffians we're game for a fight!
With Radnor's help, Harrington forced Louisville Ike and LeMaster through the door and back to the passenger car. Harrington tried to get himself across the few exposed feet between doors.
Whew!
Steelhead Radnor was in the front door of the passenger car.
Mr. Harrington, you all right?
Yes! Keep them off this train! I'll stay here! What can I do to help?
For starters, you can shoot at somebody!
Behind the train, Mellon and White raced along the side of the tracks.
Come on, White! If they reach that flat spot up ahead, we'll never catch up!
But even as Mellon shouted, the train leveled onto a stretch of flatter ground and began building speed.
Damn it!
Carl White could see the train pulling away from him, and he let up on his horse. In a second, Mellon did the same, letting his horse drop back until he and White sat side by side.
We better hope Stan or Priest is better than we did.
White looked around at Luther Eisen and the Bayes brothers as they came riding up beside him.
Don't blame me. I figured these two knew better than to start shooting.
The Bayes brothers looked ashamed.
I ain't blaming nobody. Priest or Stanton should have taken charge here.
Soon as the train started across the stretch of level ground, Denver Stanton sailed out from 10 feet above on a rock ledge and landed atop the passenger car. At the rear of the car's roof, there was a brakeman's platform. Denver Stanton kneeled down with one hand on the brake wheel. He looked forward and saw J.T. Priest and Bert Eisen hurl themselves out of a shelf of rock and scrub juniper and land atop the service engine.
You didn't outfox me, you son of a bitch!
Hearing the sound of men atop his engine, Jones looked up.
Vance, they're coming in! Shoot them!
C.B. Harrington lay in a corner, cringing against a mound of coal. The fireman raised his rifle and aimed at the engine's metal roof. Suddenly, Priest kicked open the back door, and Bert Eisen raised his pistol.
Okay, lad, hurry now. Grab that coupling pin and cut the car loose. I got these two covered.
Jones looked at the fireman lying wounded on the floor, the rifle only inches from his hand.
Don't even think about it. I'd hate to have to kill you and drive this thing myself.
Priest stepped over, picked up the rifle, and stepped back to the open door. Bert turned towards the sound of gunfire.
Pay him no attention, lad. Pull that pin. Stan and the others can take care of themselves. You're with me now, my second in command.
Lord God, he cut me loose.
Stanton saw the growing separation between the engine and the car. He raced forward along the roof of the car, the gap growing wider and wider. At the edge of the rail car, he flung himself out and managed to catch the metal roof of the engine by his fingertips. On the small platform below Stanton, Priest looked up and saw him flailing his legs wildly, trying to hang on.
Damn it!
He reached up and caught Stanton around his legs and helped him down.
Get out here, Denver. I was afraid we'd lost you.
Yeah, I bet you were.
Stanton looked back and saw the gap between the engine and the passenger car widen. The passenger car slowed down against the upward grade.
What's that supposed to mean?
Nothing! What do we do about the others?
They'll have to look out for themselves. Bert and me saw our chance and took it. Right, Bert?
Priest looked at the blank face of Bert Eisen as the young man stood up, swaying to the rhythm of the engine. Bert made no response.
Just be glad I managed to bring you along. Now then, gentlemen, on to Cold Ridge.
There's a blizzard dropping down on us in case you don't know it.
That's your concern. It just means you better squeeze this bucket of bolts for all the speed it's worth.
Priest looked at Harrington.
Now what do we have here? I've seen you before, haven't I?
I'm C.B. Harrington. Yes, we may have met at a stock convention or somewhere over the years. Come to think of it, I believe we met at just such a convention in Chicago.
Do tell.
Yes. We listened to the vice president discuss natural growth and expansion in precious metals.
I'll have to take your word for it. Good to see you again, though. Stanton, shoot him.
Denver Stanton stepped forward and raised his pistol toward Harrington's chest.
No! No, please! Please hear me out, sir! I came here to help you, Priest. I have major holdings in Midwest Investments. I can restructure.
Hold it, Stanton. Let's hear what dear Mr. Harrington has to say.
I don't mean to interrupt, but somebody's gonna have to stoke that boiler if we're going anywhere.
Priest reached out with his boot toe and nudged the wounded fireman.
You there? Ready to get back to work?
He can't do nothing. Look at him. He's shot all to hell.
Oh, I understand. Bert, shoot him.
Jones stiffened, but he kept his attention on the rails ahead.
Now then, I trust you can shovel as you talk, sir.
Harrington hurried, picking up the shovel and opening the door to the firebox.
I heard what happened in Chicago a while back. How you were arrested, how Mr. William Marbury disappeared. I began buying up outstanding shares of Midwest Investment in a bid for a takeover. I have a list of stockholders in my coat pocket. And proof of my purchases. I came here to force, that is, persuade Quick Charlie Sims to sell me the shares he took from you. And with those shares...
Well, Sims. Quick Charlie Sims is around here?
He's in Cold Ridge, I'm pretty sure. He stole my Pullman car and left it back there at the depot. He's after the same thing I am. Control of the corporation. If he gets it, all of you lose. Sims will cut out Los Pistoleros and run the business straight. But if I make my move, there's room for you in it, Priest. I'll restructure, issue additional stock, restore your shares through a proxy, at a discount, of course. And you're back in the game. I'll even put it all in writing.
A discount? Let's see this stockholders list and that proof of purchase certificate. Stanton, stoke that fire. Give me and Mr. Harrington a chance to get acquainted.
Back at the abandoned passenger car, Steelhead Radnor, Louisville Ike, and LeMasters stepped out onto the rear deck with their hands raised. Gant searched each of them for weapons, and in turn shoved them down off the deck platform to the ground. Radnor faced Carl White and the others.
Howdy, Carl. Remember me?
I'll be damned. What are you doing up here, Steelhead, you overgrown son of a bitch? I heard they strung you up for murder back in Houston.
Houston was a big misunderstanding. I got hooked up with this Harrington fellow a couple weeks back. He's on that engine right now. Told him I had no qualms against killing any of you if I had to. They always like hearing that kind of talk, you know?
Don't they, though? You remember Earl Millen, I reckon? He's the one you was just shooting at?
Earl the Pearl. Sure I do. How's it going, Earl? Sorry for shooting at you.
Think nothing of it, Steelhead. I was shooting back.
White nodded toward LeMaster and Louisville Light.
What about these two scared-to-death-looking fools? Are they with you?
These boys couldn't find their dicks in a rainstorm. Shoot them if you feel like it.
Nah, we need our ammunition in case we catch up to Priest. I can't believe that bastard did us that way. He told us we was the new Los Pistoleros, then lit out like dogs was on his tail.
He knows what's on his tail, all right. There's two of Judge Parker's deputies headed up there right now.
Hell, that's what Priest must have spotted through his field lens. JT had it all made up to ride into Cold Ridge with a show of force. Reckon he saw the lawman and had a sudden change of plans.
If he gets my boy hurt, I'll kill him flat out.
Luther Eisen snatched his horse by its reins and led it away from the others.
Who's that?
Just one more sore loser. His son's a complete idiot. There's no telling what Priest has in mind for him. I can remember when this used to be a fine gang to ride with. Nowadays, it's just one more licking-a-promise operation. They promise you everything, then the first thing you know, you're standing in the cold with an empty rail car and the law climbing down your shirt.
Don't start getting misty on us, Earl. Now, we got a big blow moving this way. Are we going on up or holding out here till it passes over?
This is Gant, a good gunman, but a little distracted by the weather, as you might have noticed.
Whew. Makes no sense fighting a storm when there's a hot stove inside that rail car.
A hot stove? Oh, hell, what are we doing out here? Come on.
What about us?
What about you? You can gather some wood for the stove, can't you? That'll keep you on our good side. For a while, anyway.
Louisville-like and LeMaster quickly moved to gather more wood. The men all crowded into the rail car.
What about the two deputies coming?
Now the hell with them. They come snooping, we'll take care of them. I've been wanting to shoot somebody all morning. Did your man Harrington bring any whiskey with him?
Think I'd be here otherwise?
Sullivan Hart and two Jack Roth had heard the gunfire from farther down the mountainside. For over 2 hours now, they'd pushed their horses as hard as they dared, leading the switchback trail, cutting the time short, getting above the winding rails by taking elk paths the last few miles. When at last they spotted the abandoned passenger car, smoke now coiling up from the stack of its small wood stove, they edged closer, keeping in the cover of rock.
What do you think?
They saw Luther Eisen sitting huddled at his horse's hooves with a ragged blanket wrapped around his shoulders.
I think whatever we're going to do, we need to get busy doing it. I've never seen a blizzard take this long to hit, but when it does, it'll be one for the books.
Roth looked to their left at a long crevice in the tall upthrust of rock.
Looks like we can get these horses in there if we had to.
I'd like to know how many men are in there before we get started.
Alongside the car stood the gunman's horses, and the four horses C.B. Harrington and his men had brought with them.
Well, that's easy enough to find out. Here, hold my reins. Cover me.
Roth eased around the cover of rock and dropped out of sight into a stretch of scrub cedar whose roots clung like claws to the steep slope. Roth crawled the last few feet, keeping out of sight should anyone from the rail car come out unexpectedly. As quick as a snake, he slipped up against his back, threw his thick arm around Luther's face, and lifted him like a sack of flour.
Keep still or I'll crush your little pea head.
Roth lifted Luther's pistol from his holster as he dragged him into the cover of the cedars. Once he had made it to Hart's position, Roth pitched Luther Eisen to the ground.
Deputies, I'm not with those men. Me and my boy came upon them last evening, looking for a place out of the cold.
There's a blizzard coming down on us, and we don't have much time. Be real careful about lying. We're not in a mood for it.
You mentioned your boy. You're Luther Eisen, aren't you? You heard him, Luther. Don't lie to us. I'm having a hard time keeping this man from setting that car on fire and shooting every one of your buddies as they run out. He's real upset about what happened in those towns back there.
This is all my boy's idea. Him and that Negro Gant that was living with us. I just came along to try and stop him.
We talked to your wife, Luther.
Oh. Well, I never could get her to go along with anything.
How many are in there, Luther? Start talking.
In the passenger car, Radnor passed a bottle to Earl Mellon as the lot of them gathered in a close circle around the glowing wood stove.
All that fancy talk about Midwest investment and controlling stock never meant a thing to me. I'm like you boys, just a working outlaw trying to stay ahead. It's not getting easier these days.
Carl White took the bottle.
Ain't that the truth? Phelps sent us to bring in J.T. Priest, then Priest led us to believe that he'd take us on full-time with Los Pistoleros. Now he's run out on us. No wonder people don't trust each other anymore. You can't afford to.
Well, boys, it's a simple fact. You have to go where the money's at.
The men all looked at Earl, unsure just what he meant.
One of yous get out there and bring in some more wood. This time bring enough to last a while.
Both Louisville Ike and LeMaster appeared reluctant.
You heard, my friend. Go get some wood.
Come on, Ike. We'll both go.
The man stood up and slinked away out the back of the car.
Check on Luther while you're at it. Tell him to get in here and warm up. Dumb sumbitch.
Is that a good idea? Letting both them yard birds out of our sight?
Hell, they can't run off. Where are they gonna go?
Just as Louisville Ike and LeMaster moved into the cedars gathering scraps of wood, LeMaster felt a big Cherokee deputy's gloved hand clamp around his neck from behind. Roth pulled him over to where Louisville Ike was stooping down to pick up a chunk of pine deadfall. With a big hand around each of their necks, Roth dragged him back to the crevice where Hart stood waiting with his rifle covering the passenger car.
If it keeps on like this, we'll soon have them all.
Hart grabbed LeMaster and threw him over against Luther Eisen. Luther sat with his hands cuffed behind his back.
Listen, you know we're not with these men. This whole thing went wrong on us. Harrington is gone. Got caught on the engine when it got uncoupled. We're not outlaws. You both know that. We didn't put up a fight. We're glad you got here.
Sit down and shut up. We tried warning you fools about coming up here.
No, it wasn't us who wanted to come. It was Harrington and Steelhead Radnor. Radnor knows these men. He used to ride with them.
Roth reached over and thumped LeMaster on the head.
Sit there and keep your mouth shut. Hart, we better start making our move if we're going to. I don't like the looks of that sky.
The glow of the wood stove had dimmed as the bottle of whiskey was slowly emptied by thirsty mouths. The circle of men had inched closer to the stove instinctively. Radnor and White looked at one another, both coming to a realization at the same time.
What the hell's taking them so long? I could have chopped a cord of firewood by now. Gant, check them out. Tell Luther to get in here too.
I'll go this time. But don't get my name stuck in your mouths every time there's fetching to be done.
He just don't know, does he?
White gave him a secretive wink.
Then he'd better learn.
Gant stood on the rear platform and looked all around, seeing no sign of LeMaster, Louisville Ike, or Luther Eisen. He did see Luther's horse milling close to the stretch of scrub cedars, and that gave him pause.
Luther! You there? Luther! You hear me?
Don't let them get that door closed.
Roth stood a few feet from Hart with his rifle propped over the edge of a rock.
I won't.
The bullet picked Gann up and hurled him backward through the door.
What the hell?
Shorty Bay shot out one of the side windows. He ran towards it and climbed halfway out. Tom Bays tried to run towards his fallen brother, but a blast of wind roared up and rocked the car far over onto one side.
Shorty!
Tom Bays fell backward and rolled into the wood stove.
Jesus, we're on fire!
Mellon and Steelhead Radnor crouched inside the rear door.
We've got to get out to the horses!
Suddenly, a strong wind blasted along the mountainside, bending scrub cedars over onto their sides. The storm had finally come. Behind his cover of rock, Hart felt the impact of the wind-driven sleet try to lift him from the ground.
Two-Jack! Are you all right?
Two-Jack Roth had dropped flat to the ground behind his rock cover. He only raised his head enough to nod in reply. Hart crawled on his belly to the edge of his cover and managed to peep around it long enough to catch a glimpse of the rail car shaking and quivering in the gale. The wind was strong enough now to lift the car up onto wheels for a second before crashing it back down onto the rails. Steelhead Radnor came spinning out the door. Flames were belching out of the broken windows of the train car.
Oh, my God.
Steelhead scrambled, flailing his arms, trying in frantic desperation to grab something to keep himself from being blown away.
Help me!
Stay down, Two-Jack!
Hart dove back into the rocky crevice amid the prisoners and the terrified horses. Luckily, Two-Jack had already taken deeper cover beneath a low overhang of rock. One of the outlaw's horses sailed by overhead.
We're all gonna die! We're all gonna die!
Luther Eisen crawled deeper into the crevice, his hands cuffed behind his back, his boots digging fiercely into the ground. Broken pieces of the passenger car swept above the edge of the rock cover. Sullivan Hart saw Tom Bays Jr. bounce down out of the passing streak of ice and shattered wood and debris. Hart dove forward, threw his arms around Bays' chest, and hurled the two of them back into the deep crevice. In an instant, Two-Jack Roth came diving in atop him.
It's the hardest blow I've ever seen.
For a full half hour, they lay there, the lawmen and the lawless, united in their state of siege. When the wind lessened, the cold, frightened faces looked at one another. The remaining horses milled nervously.
Is it stopping?
It's trying to.
Roth stood up first from the tangle of limbs, then reached a hand down to Hart and pulled him up. Hart looked at the men on the ground. Louisville Ike and LeMaster were both trembling, out of control. Luther Eisen still had his hands cuffed behind his back. Hart reached down, pulled Tom Bays' pistol from its holster, and shoved it down into his belt.
Help them up.
I think my arm's broke.
Hart helped him to his feet and leaned him back against the rock wall. He looked at the sliver of white bone poking out through the skin in Bays' forearm.
Yep, it's broke. Stay here and don't move it. We'll set it first chance we get. Can I trust you not to run?
Run where?
It wouldn't be the first stupid thing I've seen out of a prisoner.
Hart raised Louisville Ike and LeMaster to their feet.
Come on, you two. Stick close to me. We don't know who's still alive out there.
Upon leaving the shelter of the rock crevice and looking around at the area, it became apparent that there was no one else left alive. Except for the scattered remains of the rail car and a hat pinned high up in the branches of a swaying spruce, there was nothing to indicate that man had ever been present less than an hour ago.
Lord, Deputy, what was that? I've never seen anything like it.
I have, but nothing that hard. Usually a blizzard has spent itself by the time it comes through the mountains. This one will do some killing down in the flatland.
Taking the lead, Roth guided the others to where a tall, flat rock provided a windbreak. In the shelter of the rock, two horses stood with bits of cedar and gravel tangled in their manes and tails. Hart settled the horses and inspected them for injuries. The horses were shaken, but sound, a few cuts showing on their flanks and legs.
They've been tossed around pretty bad, but they'll do.
We're not going to try traveling in this, are we? It's still rough out here.
Yep, we're pushing on. You haven't seen rough yet. If there's a head of snow behind this thing, we could get trapped here for the next month.
You mean there's more?
More than likely, yep. There's more weather coming. What do you think a blizzard is? Some heavy snow, dropping temperature? A blizzard is more like a Kansas twister, only with ice in it and a heap of snow right behind it.
Oh, Jesus. Do you suppose C.B. Harrington made it through on the engine?
If not, I expect we'll find out along the trail.
In a winding, narrow canyon where towering walls of rock rose up on either side of the tracks, Jones helped Denver Stanton and Bert Eisen clear a fallen aspen from the rail.
I should have had my damned head examined coming up here for any amount of money.
Me too. You think I like this any better than you do? I know what was about to happen to me if I hadn't hopped a ride on that engine.
Jones just stared at Stanton.
That's right. He was leaving me and the others hanging down there. You think it's all whiskey and good times riding with a bunch of outlaws?
Well, never gave it much thought. If it's any harder than railroading, though, I feel sorry for yous.
How much longer before we get to Cold Ridge?
Ordinarily just a couple more hours, but if there's a lot of spill on the tracks, it could take us a whole other day. That's not counting any heavy snow we have to deal with.
Think those two give a damn?
Stanton gestured toward the engine sitting 100 feet away, smoke rising in slow, steady puffs from its stack.
They couldn't care less if the sun never shined. What with them and their business deal?
In the warm compartment of the service engine, C.B. Harrington sat close to the firebox, with the glove off his right hand and a pencil and notepad resting on his knee. J.T. Priest sat with his pistol across his lap, watching engrossed as Harrington worked with a scribbled column of figures.
You see, this is why I can't understand Midwest Investment even having anything to do with Los Pistoleros. It's simply bad business.
Now that I'm a wanted man, I tend to agree. But old habits die hard, sir. There was a time when it was just me, William Marbury, and a handful of others. We robbed enough banks and payrolls to foot the bill for everything else. I always said when something works, you stick with it.
Well, too bad then. Because if I restructure this corporation, it will be with the understanding that Los Pistoleros has nothing more to do with it, including owning any of the outstanding stock, which I'm assured Cleveland Phelps does.
Harrington held up the notepad, pointing the tip of the pencil to a long, impressive figure.
On the other hand, this is what I'm prepared to pay you as a silent partner.
Well, that's fair, perhaps. But don't forget, I'll be on the run for the rest of my life. Once this figure runs out, then what?
Oh, Mr. Priest, I'm afraid you don't understand. This is the amount you'll receive per year, deposited in an account at the bank of your choice anywhere in the world.
How do I know you'll make that deposit every year?
You have my word as a gentleman, sir.
Oh, shit. No gentleman ever started from scratch the way you say you did and come out rich with a word that's worth any more than the air that formed it. Don't insult my intelligence. Things might have gone wrong for me lately, but I'm no fool. I've still got enough sense to pull a trigger.
All right, sir. We'll put it in writing. As soon as all the other shares are in my name, you'll receive your first year's payment. Do we have a deal, sir?
You realize that Sims will have to die.
I wouldn't have it any other way, sir.
It seems like a mighty generous offer.
Well, and well, it is. But you realize, of course, this is all providing that you can deliver the shares Quick Charlie Sims owns and the shares that presently belong to Cleveland Phelps.
There's a lot of Los Pistoleros scattered all over this country. They won't stand for being cut out this way.
Let me worry about that, JT. Once your name is off the stockholders list and the corporation is mine, I'll simply claim ignorance. Tell the authorities my new company is riddled with outlaws, and sit back and let the law do its job.
It could take an army to handle a gang this size.
Then an army it shall be. Make no mistake, Mr. Priest. I will lead this corporation to heights you and William Marbury could only have imagined.
Yeah? And what say we take a look at that figure one more time? Just for the hell of it.
Before the blizzard wind had even made its way down through the mountain passes, it had struck Cold Ridge hard. Before the main thrust of the storm hit, Sims ran into the saloon.
Charlie!
Get back there
with Herman. I've got Sims.
Kate ran to the back room. Sims struggled forward, the wind sucking him backward toward the wide open door. With one hand thrown around a thick support timber, Sweet grabbed Sims by his coat and helped him press forward. Chairs tumbled across the floor and sailed out.
Ready?
Before Sims could even nod, Sweet hurled him to the back door. As if on cue, Kate pressed the door open enough for Sims and Sweet to squeeze through in turn. Then the three of them shouldered the door closed. Sweet propped the chair back beneath the knob. Then he dragged Herman from his bed.
Sims, open the trap door!
There was a trap door under the bed. Sims pulled the trap door open, and they quickly climbed down the steps. He shut the door and threw the timber latch. Sims pulled with all his weight on the wide latch.
It's gone, Sims. You can let go.
Sims had to force himself to turn loose of the timber latch. When he did, he looked at Kate in the dim glow of the lantern she'd found and lit for him.
You all right, Kate?
Kate only nodded.
Yeah, she's fine. Let's get out of here and see what we need to do. Once this kind of wind has passed, you can expect tons of snow.
You often have this sort of thing up here?
Yep, but nothing this bad. This one will be talked about in the Lowcountry for a long time.
I believe you're right, Sheriff.
Sims threw open the trap door.
God almighty.
The greater part of the saloon had been ripped away. What remained was the floor, the west wall, and part of a sagging roof held up on the two remaining support timbers.
It's gone.
Sweet was carrying Herman. He seemed to give no regard to the missing saloon or the disheveled town around him.
Come on.
Sweet nodded toward the hotel, seeing it damaged but still standing.
Let's get Herman out of this weather.
As the others filed inside the hotel, Sims stood for a second longer, looking up and down the raised streets of the town. The footbridge was still in place, although it had been tossed wildly, becoming entangled in some spots. The sheriff's office was missing a wall, its sagging tin roof forming a slope to the ground where crystalline ice had already begun forming. The livery barn lay flattened to the ground. Two horses had miraculously escaped, and they stood 50 yards away, badly shaken.
Damn it, this is all we need.
Sweet had climbed the stairs with Herman. Kate McCorkle stood leaning against the hotel desk, her hair hanging wet and tangled.
Maybe we've lucked out. Maybe the wind got him.
I wouldn't count on it, Kate.
Neither would I.
4 miles up the trail, beneath a tangle of broken ash and cedar, Cleveland Phelps rose up to his knees and crawled to the low rock overhang where most of the men and horses had taken cover. The horses were down on their sides, the men lying atop them, covered with a layer of snow and ice.
Who's left?
Doc Mason stood and shook himself off. His horse scrambled up beside him and did the same.
Lou Spivey's gone, boss. So's your brother's body. I watched them get blown away.
Along the rock overhang, Matt and Luke Terrell rose up, followed by Rhodes and Whitten.
You didn't even try to help them, did you?
Try? Hell, I was barely hanging on myself.
I bet.
Doc Mason flared instantly. Even in the cold wind, he spun, facing Whitten and Rhodes with his thick hand wrapped around his pistol butt.
Listen, you little bag of Texas pig shit.
If you've got something to say, you get it said plainly. Nobody's gonna dog me unless they've got the guts to—
Hold it! Damn it! We got enough to worry about getting a cold ridge before we get stuck by more snow. You men settle down right now, or there'll be more killing than you bargained for.
Matt and Luke Terrell moved back a few cautious steps, pulling their horses with them.
We're not taking sides, boss, but we both saw him blow away. There was nothing could be done about it.
Doc Mason stood firm with his hand on his pistol until Witten relented and tugged his ice-encrusted hat down onto his brow. Then Doc turned to Cleveland Phelps.
Want me to scout around? Look for your brother's body?
Nah, he's dead anyway. I reckon so's Luce Bivey. One of us is gonna have to double up till we get to town.
Luke Terrell had stepped up onto his horse before the others. He nudged it forward and reached a gloved hand down to Cleveland Phelps.
Here you go, boss. Hop up here.
Did I say double up with me? It's more like it.
Phelps stepped up into the saddle and nudged Terrell's horse toward the narrow trail. Rhodes and Witten looked down at Luke Terrell as they filed past him.
Way to go, Luke, you stupid son of a bitch.
Luke bristled, but before he could respond, Mac Terrell sidled his horse up to him.
Come on, cousin. Get on up here. You can keep my back warm for me.
Herman looked up from the bed at Harris Sweet, Sims, and Kate McCorkle.
We could all stay in the cellar until they've come and gone. If they think there's nobody here, maybe they'll ride on.
Not a way in the world. They can't go no farther than here, the way that snow's coming down. If we got snowed down in that cellar, we'd all die. You just worry about getting well. We'll handle the rest of it.
Sim stepped away from the bed over to the window, where he looked out at the heavy fallen snow. He looked over at the collapsed rail depot, seeing it and the railroad tracks only vaguely within the white swirl.
We're lucky to have food and coal here. We might bargain with Phelps for some of it if all else fails.
Forget bargaining, Sims. What little we got downstairs we'll have to ration as it is. It could be a long while before anybody brings the service engine up here. They might have been blown away down there for all we know. There's no point in figuring on anything now but a shootout.
Afraid you're right, Sheriff.
Sim stepped over to the shotgun leaning against the wall, picked it up, and walked to the door.
I'll be downstairs keeping an eye out for him. If I hear him trying to straighten out the bridge, I'll let you know.
Poor Charlie.
Poor Charlie? Didn't you tell me how unpredictable he is to deal with? How he never lets anybody know what he's up to till he's good and ready?
Well, yes, sometimes.
Then it looks like the weather's just treating him the way he's used to treating others.
Don't worry, Charlie's gonna be all right. He gets this way when he's got everything all planned out. He'll settle down once his plan starts falling into place.
His plan?
Oh, yeah, Charlie has a plan. You'll see. He'll come up with something. I've never seen him without a couple of aces in the hole.
On the cold street, Sims looked all around at the ruined town and shook his head.
Now what?
What on earth had he been thinking coming up here hoping he could pull off something like this? He looked forlornly through the thickening, falling snow toward the empty rails trailing out of sight down the side of the mountain. Where were Hart and Roth? Where was J.T. Priest? Where was C.B. Harrington and the others? Timing was everything, didn't they all know that? He walked to the rails and let his gaze follow them until they grew obscure in the white swirl. At his heels, he felt something brush against him.
Come on, Scratch.
He bent down, picked the big cat up, and held him against his chest and brushed snow from its back.
If you're smart, you'll find yourself a deep hole and crawl into it for a few days. I don't think they're coming.
That's right, you heard me. I'm afraid this weather's bigger than anything I came up with.
It was evening in Cold Ridge when Quick Charlie Sims heard sounds of horses moving through the snow on the other side of the twisted footbridge. The snowfall had slackened, a thick blanket of white scalloping the damaged walls of buildings and lying nearly a foot deep on the ground. Sims had just stepped out from the door of the hotel with a cup of steaming coffee in his hand.
They're here.
Sims picked up the shotgun, leaning inside the door.
Okay, I'm ready.
Kate swung her coat around her shoulders and hurried over to him as he checked the shotgun and handed it to her.
Nope. You stay here. I don't want Cleveland Phelps seeing anybody's face but mine until I've had a chance to talk with him.
You can't go out there alone, Charlie. You're not even armed.
I am armed, Kate. Go tell Sweet they're here. The two of you wait until you hear something from me.
Oh, you mean wait until we hear gunfire, don't you?
That's right. Kate, help me out here. Don't fly off and try something without me knowing it.
But by the time we hear gunfire, you could be dead, Charlie.
Then let's hope you don't hear any. Now go get Sweet.
Look at this damn mess, boss.
Rhodes sidled his horse up to the footbridge, looking at the way it lay twisted over itself.
We'll be all night getting this straightened out.
Cleveland Phelps moved his horse up closer, looked the twisted bridge over, then stepped down from the saddle and waded over to it through the deep snow.
How the devil do you straighten out a bridge that's been tossed around like this?
I've seen them do it back in Texas, only not in this kind of weather. We'll have to have some long rope.
All right, everybody give Witten some rope. Witten, let's see you do your stuff.
Witten gathered rope from the man and stepped down from his horse. Then he walked over beside Phelps.
Now what?
I gotta climb out there some way, hook this rope up and climb back. Then we take a couple of these horses and twist that sucker straight.
Well, then get to it before the snow starts up again. You heard him, Rhodes. You and Doc, get your horses ready.
Witten tied the ends of two rope coils together, then did the same with the other two.
Here I go.
He turned and reached out with a boot, testing the bridge.
Hope this baby ain't damaged. That water looks awfully cold.
Get to it!
Witten crawled out on trembling knees with the ends of the two long ropes in his hand. On the snowy bank, Rhodes stood next to Cleveland Phelps, feeding the ropes out.
I'll tie the first one here.
Shut up and do it!
Witten tied one of the ropes in place, then cautiously crawled a few feet farther and tied the other one around the swaying length of upturned walk planks. Suddenly, the whole tangled, twisted contraption swayed and shuddered in place.
Jesus, boss! I can't make it back! This sucker's shifting back and forth too bad!
Get back here, Witten, or we'll start pulling it over with you on it!
Please, boss, damn it! This thing's making me dizzy!
It's closer, coming this way!
Who are you?
I'm the man who's gonna keep this fool from drowning himself, that's who!
Who you calling a fool, damn you?
No offense!
Witten crawled one tortured inch at a time along the shifting, swaying rope and boards.
Come on, keep moving, give me your hand, easy does it.
As Sims grabbed for Witten, his other hand deftly lifted the pistol from Witten's holster, letting the bullets fall into the snow, then slipping it back into the holster all in one smooth, seamless move.
There you go.
Witten righted himself and leaned with a hand on the thick suspension rope. On the other side of the bridge, Cleveland Phelps stood staring across at him while Rhodes and Doc Mason tied the ropes to the horses.
Okay, Phelps, get that bridge straightened out. I've been waiting here to talk to you.
Son of a bitch! It's Sims! Hold him there, Witten! Don't let that snake get away!
Behind Phelps and the Terrell cousins, Doc Mason and Rhodes hurried, coaxing the horses forward, the animals leaning into the heavy swaying weight as the upturned bridge made its way back over.
Sims, When I get over there, you're dead, you slippery dog. What happened to my brother? We found his body, don't lie. You killed him, didn't you?
Stop acting like an idiot, Phelps. Think I'd be stupid enough to be here if I killed your brother? Him and his friend got drunk, got in an argument, and shot one another. That's the plain truth of it. The bartender tried stopping him, but he got a bullet in his chest for his efforts. I saw the whole thing. Take my word for it.
Your word? God, I gotta kill him. Hurry up, damn it to hell. I gotta rip his heart out. Don't move an inch, do you hear me? Get that damn bridge turned over right now.
I hear you, Phelps. I told you I'm here to talk business. I didn't kill your brother. And I'm not worried about this fool shooting me. I figure if he shoots me, he'll soon be dead too, once you realize how much money he caused you to lose. Listen to me, Phelps. I know JT Priest is on his way here, but he doesn't have what you want. I do.
You got nothing I want, Sims. Witten, if he opens his mouth again, shoot him. Get that damn blasted bridge turned over, I'll shoot you both!
I have Priest's share in Midwest Investment, Phelps! You sure you don't want to talk about it?
Sims, what have you got in writing?
I've got the whole transaction between me and Priest. It's even filed and on record at Fort Smith. I own every share JT Priest had to his name.
Why'd he do that?
Because he was stupid, Phelps! And if you harm me before you listen to what I can do for you, then you're as stupid as he is.
Luke Terrell stepped in beside Cleveland Phelps with a rifle in his hands.
I've got him for you.
Wait, hold on, Luke. Sims, what about my brother?
I told you, Phelps. He should have told you the same thing.
He was already dead when we found him. What happened, Sims?
They shot one another. He killed the other man. We begged him to stay so that he could get his wound taken care of. He's too hard-headed to listen. Has he always been that way?
Yeah, he was.
The bridge gave way to the pull of the horses, and with a mighty yank, flopped over into place.
You stay put, Sims. We'll be right there. Hurry up, damn it. It's not getting any warmer here.
Phelps and his men quickly crossed the footbridge and made it over to the other side.
I bet you're just smug enough to think you're coming out of this alive some way, ain't you, Quick Charlie?
I'm calling it even money right now, but we'll see how it goes.
You arrogant son of a bitch!
Phelps drew his pistol back for a good swipe at Sims's forehead.
Hold it, Phelps! Charlie's not alone here. I'm here, so's the sheriff. Like you said, we're here on business. But you know how I can get if I lose my temper.
That crazy bitch. You even took Priest's woman, you sneaking...
She was with me long before she was with him. Are we gonna talk business or what?
Is that right, sweet? You're back in this swindler's play? Against all of us? That don't sound like you.
It's me, all right. Bring harm to him or the woman, I'll cut you in half for cat food.
So, you think you got a deal that's in my best interest, Sims? Then let's hear it.
I knew you'd listen to reason. Let's go to the hotel.
The small engine struggled the last mile up toward Cold Ridge, the short cattle catcher blade barely handling the foot of snow on the tracks.
It'll be easier coming down, provided we don't stay long and this snow gets no worse.
JT Priest took note of the sour look on Stanton's face.
Look at it this way, Stanton. Once we get Phelps to go along with CD here, we'll be chasing naked women along a beach somewhere. Probably have some island chieftain begging us to father him some grandkids.
Shit. In the lobby of the dimly lit hotel, Sims pulled out a wooden chair and gestured a hand toward the chair on the other side of the table. Phelps looked at the chair, but he didn't sit down. Instead, with his pistol still in hand, he looked around the lobby at Kate McCorkle and Sheriff Harris' suite. Sweet stood on the fourth step of the staircase, commanding the room. Kate McCorkle stood in the opposite corner of the room, a large oak buffet ready to offer her cover if she needed it. Cleveland Phelps's men were standing in an open spot a few feet from the wooden table with two shotguns covering them. Phelps took note of their position and pulled the chair out from the table, but still did not sit down right away.
You've bought yourself nothing but more than a few minutes, Sims. I've wanted to kill you ever since Chicago, so make this fast.
A few minutes is all I need, Phelps.
I haven't forgot about my brother, Darby. Tell me your version of what happened to him, sweet.
Whatever Sims told you is how it went.
Oh, so you've let this swindler get into your ear? Forgotten who your friends are, sweet?
It's Sheriff Sweet to you, Phelps. We never been friends, and we ain't likely to start this evening. You want my version? Your brother's dead because he was nothing but a hole at the end of a skunk's belly. It must run in the family.
Hey, everybody, let's keep our heads here. We're all a little tense. What say we crack open a bottle of bourbon and get down to business?
When I've heard this snake's deal, whatever comes to this, I might kill you anyway, sweet. You boys, watch my back. I happen to know how this sheriff got his reputation.
Your brother was coming here to help you do something for both of your benefit, right, Phelps? I know he'd wish the best for you, wouldn't he?
Hell, he never did. But he was still my brother.
Well, all right, then. Let's sit down like businessmen, and let me tell you my offer.
Start talking.
Phelps jerked the chair the rest of the way out with his boot and sat down slowly, laying his pistol down atop the table and keeping a hand on it.
Like I told you, Phelps, I have the shares of stock J.T. Priest owned in Midwest Investment. Now, he's on the run, coming here. Before he gets here, I'm offering you the stock. Every last share of it.
Yeah?
For free, Phelps. But you've got to give me Priest. He's got to go with me.
But then I wouldn't get to kill you, would I, Sims?
You're not killing him anyway. So take him seriously, you son of a bitch.
Easy, Kate.
Why do you want Priest?
It's a personal matter.
As he spoke, Sims reached inside his coat. Phelps' eyes closely followed his hand. He pulled out a folded document. He unfolded it, laid it on the table, and slid it over to Phelps.
There's the ownership transfer form. All it needs is my signature of release, and then it's all yours, or whoever you want to assign the shares to.
Now, ain't that nice? What's to keep me from making you sign it anyway? Or what if I just took it and signed it myself? All I have to do then is...
Oh, forget it, Phelps. You're smarter than that. You'd know I'd die before I'd be forced to sign anything. Besides, you've never seen my signature. This signature doesn't match the one on the record at Fort Smith. You can't take ownership.
I don't know, Sims. Priest means a lot to me. Not to mention how bad I want to kill you. Besides, if those lawmen are on his heels, I can't guarantee they won't snatch him away from you.
That'll be up to me to deal with, Phelps. All I want is for everybody to stay back and let me settle up with Priest.
And for that, I get the shares in Midwest Investment, signed, sealed, and delivered?
Well, that's the whole of it, Phelps. I sign the papers over. You don't even have to sign them right now. You can leave your part blank for the time being. Put the shares in your name or anybody's you want later on.
Sims reached his hand across the table to Phelps.
Deal?
Get your hand down, Sims. We ain't in church. Sure, go ahead and sign. I'll stay out of the way between you and Priest.
Sims took out a nibbled pen and a small traveler's bottle of ink. He stalled, taking his time opening the bottle, cleaning the tip of the pen. He positioned his wrist to sign.
What the hell's that? The supply train?
Get it signed, Sims.
Sure thing, Phelps.
His hand poised over the paper. Sims then slowly formed his signature across the line.
There now.
Phelps snatched the paper, folded it, and stuffed it inside his coat.
I gave you my word I'd stay out from between the two of you. So if that's J.T. Priest at the depot, he's all yours. You better have the guts to kill him, and kill him quick. I hope you have better sense than to think he won't try to blow your head off the second he lays eyes on you.
Sims just stared.
Whitten, get over there and see if that's Priest. If it is, bring him right over.
What if it's not Priest, boss?
Who the hell else would it be?
The deputies, maybe?
If it is, then you start shooting, Witten. We'll keep an ear out for you. Luke, Matt, get an eye out the window. See who comes back with him. Doc, you and Rhodes make sure dear Miss Kate and this old gunman don't decide to make a play on us. I always heard you're a hell of a gamesman, Sims. I have to say I'm a little disappointed in you.
Oh? How do you mean?
You'll see.
Well, you're not going to double-cross me, are you, Phelps? You gave me your word.
He's all yours, Mr. Quick Charlie Sims. I'm just anxious to see if you can handle him.